Yeah, this is a sweet kind of like a tip of the hat to the ladies around the country.
Which, in all honesty, unfortunately, pulls some of the fun out of it.
So I suppose, yeah. Listen, like I said, DLR did it better.
This is the Epic New Podcast, Two Idiots and a List, where you're going to get two idiots and a list. And now, coming to you live from Circle Avenue Studios, your hosts, Nick Fasolo and Kirik McMillan.
It's been a bit.
Seasons change. I think it was before Christmas, right?
I think we recorded it before Thanksgiving. Well, to let the folks who are listening know, I might have needed a little break. Things were getting a little burned out. I was a little frustrated by the whole Universal Music thing, which they did respond to us one year later.
We're still going through the process?
Yeah. After we've already deleted our old feed, which had all the reviews, blah, 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 whatever. So, yes, we are back. I am the bouncer. You are the cooler. I see you found my trophy room, Dalton.
The only thing that's missing is your ass.
I want you to be nice. Did you see the Jake Gyllenhaal remake?
I have not yet.
I mean,
I'm not a big Jake Gyllenhaal guy, so
he's fine, but I mean, like, I don't know, man. It's just so like that. That was the movie that did not need to be remade.
No, it's its own perfection
on its own, right? And when you're not going to bring in the karate gi to wear for Jake Gyllenhaal, right, like Patrick Swayze pulls off, like, you know,
what the gi that's tucked into his pants, if I remember correctly.
Z Cavaricci.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the only thing is missing is like the nude yoga that the guy from Die Hard 2 does in the middle.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, if we could get a nude yoga from Patrick Swayze, I think that would have been really just chef's kiss.
Especially now.
I don't think you want to see that. Although his locks would have grown even
more. Oh, yes. Luscious head of hair. It's part of what makes Point Break so good. So we are back. We are going to go to probably a more stuttered and slightly less frequent schedule. Well, hopefully not less,
less frequent than what we've done. 6 months.
I would anticipate seeing an episode from us every 3 to 4 months. My workload has kicked up and it's just harder to kind of do this stuff while maintaining gainful employment.
A productive job.
Yes. So please keep following our feeds. You're going to eventually see something from us again here. It may not be super predictable, but I would put it in that 3 to 4 month time frame. All right, Nick, who are we doing today?
We are reaching back all the way. Like, this is, I think, the earliest band that we've done. And it is a classic American band. We're going to hit up the Beach Boys.
Now, we've done this in part as a sort of a nod to your father.
He's been every time I see him, he's like, when are you doing the Beach Boys? You know, you really ought to do the Beach Boys. Like, yeah, it's on the list. It's like, it is. So, like, it was on the list, and so here it is.
So get off your ass.
Get off my ass. But no, as, like, I'm going through the catalog, I'm like, well, this is it. This is, like, the whole childhood here. I mean, because we've done the Stones, Elton John, the Beatles, and the Beach Boys. That's pretty much it. And the Eagles also, unfortunately.
We haven't done the Beatles yet.
No, we haven't done the Beatles, but with all the other ones, like the Beach Boys were the one that we wasn't really on the list, but then it was like, oh, yeah, well, here it is. Like, my entire childhood of music is, like, right here. This was it.
So yeah.
Every single song, I'm like, I knew every... I mean, I don't think I'm different from everybody else. Like, these are just tremendously popular songs to this day, 60 years later.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what my takeaway on this was. When you had asked to do the Beach Boys, I looked, you know, mentally looked back I thought, I don't know if I know that many Beach Boys songs. And by the time I was done, I had 30 on a list.
Oh, yeah.
Of songs that I recognized, sure. Songs that I knew, songs that I liked. You know, that really surprised me. I don't know why it surprised me. I mean, I know the Beach Boys were big, but no one in my family listened to them. Yeah. So I only had radio exposure, really, and, you know, the occasional movie soundtrack. But I knew of that, I knew, like I said, probably 30 songs.
Yeah, that's crazy because, like, yeah, your family was a little bit different than mine. That was my dad's, like, album-buying years was, in, like, the 60s and the 70s. And so, of course, he would, like, those were huge-selling albums,
sure.
Along with the other ones, like the Beatles and the Eagles and the other stuff like that. And so he had probably a dozen of them.
Yeah.
Which, you know, after, like, 72, they were, like, well, another greatest hits of the Beach Boys. And, like, here's another greatest hits of the Beach Boys. Like, guys. What's going on?
Yeah, when your primary member isn't leaving the house, it does tend to be a little challenging to make music.
Well, we'll get to all of that.
Sure.
And that's but these guys are essential to American music, American pop music.
And you see things in current music that when you listen to this, you go, boy, somebody did that already. Wait a minute. These guys did it first. Someone's doing it now. Or, you know, even in that mid to late 70s range, you had bands that were a little more progressive, the Pink Floyds of the world,
right.
Doing things that you could argue they were inspired to do because of some of those late 60s sounds that these guys were doing.
Yeah, and I'll just tip my hand right now. The pure genius of Brian Wilson as a musician is undeniable. And like what you said, like they were doing these things first. There's really no band that has done this since. Like the harmonizations alone, the vocal harmonizations, four-part harmonies.
It's rare.
It's rare, and it's like, it's Motown shit, sure.
Yep.
For sure. But like that type of, the harmonizations along with the musicianship that went along with what Brian Wilson was done.
Right.
And so when we're comparing, because it was ultimately they were compared to the Beatles, there was always like this kind of like, you know, they're always, the media is, you know, trying to get this rivalry between the Beatles and the Rolling Stones or the Beatles and the Beach Boys. And really, and the reality of it is like, no, we're all talented. I really like what they're doing over there and they influence me. Of course they do. And so it's not that big, but I lost my point.
I agree with you. I agree with you on the brilliance of Wilson, and this gave me that appreciation.
Oh,
for that, sure.
Yeah, that's what it was. McCartney had Lennon, Richards had, you know, Mick. Brian Wilson was all alone. It was just him. He didn't have, and Mike Love wrote some of the lyrics, but it was him making the music for everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
And when he didn't, you could see some of the differences.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
And some of it was okay. Some of it was not. Yes, definitely the fingerprints that Wilson leaves on the band, Brian Wilson. And for those who don't know, there are three brothers in the band. The band originally had five members, Brian, Carl, and Dennis Wilson. Mm-hmm. Their cousin was Mike Love, and then their school friend, Al Jardine.
Right.
Brian is the only surviving brother. Carl died from lung cancer in 98, and Dennis drowned in 1983.
Yeah, he drowned in Malibu.
Friends with Charles Manson for a brief time. Dennis was.
Well.
They partied together. Actually, the story on this is pretty funny. They partied together, and this was before the Manson murders.
Right before.
Not like, too long before,
a
yeah.
A month or two before.
Was it that close?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he apparently connected with Manson in some way. They had shared some musical tastes. In fact, the Beach Boys actually recorded one of his songs, you know, slightly augmenting it. It's called Never Learn Not to Love. It's not bad.
Well, they changed his lyrics and they changed the title of the song because that's what Brian Wilson does. And when Charles Manson heard it, he got so fucking pissed off that he threatened Dennis Wilson. And so Dennis had to leave his house, which Charlie and his girls had already been kind of squatting in.
Yes.
So, like, you know, Dennis and, you know, Steve McQueen are riding up and down, you know, Ventura Highway, banging everything that moves. And they come across these Manson girls that, you know, give them a hell of a ride and a hell of a case of gonorrhea.
I was going to say, it gave them all the clap. That was the funny part. So that's where I heard that Manson was booted out of the house. Wasn't the threat, but because they all got gonorrhea.
Well, yeah. And that's kind of like what led Manson to the Sharon Tate house, because a record producer had lived there months before. And he's like, I think it's Terry Belcher. I want to say that, but I don't know if
sure.
That's true or not, if it's accurate or not. But that he was looking for, that was the house. And that's why he sent, you know, his demons to go do what they did.
Yeah. Mike Love and Al Jardine are still alive, by the way.
They are.
In terms of the brothers, it's only Brian.
Still trading on the Beach Boys name.
Yes, absolutely.
Still out there.
Right? And why not?
I mean,
why not? Come on,
dude. It's like Mike Love's got to be pushing 80.
They're all up there. I mean, really? Brian's 81 and now suffering from dementia.
Wow.
But
he lives out here in St. Charles, or he did for a long time. He lived in St. Charles.
Does he really?
Yeah, for a long, long time.
Hmm.
Yeah.
West suburban Chicago.
Yeah, it was just a weird thing to go from Malibu, California to like
the Midwest.
West suburban Chicago. Okay.
Couple of quick facts on these guys. 100 million records sold worldwide. Now, and I don't know why I took note of this, but I happened to see this fact right around the time that I saw the 100 million figure. New Kids on the Block sold 80 million records worldwide. Which I found a little disgusting. The New Kids are at 80% of the Beach Boys sales.
What a country.
Right. According to the Beach Boys website, they had 36 songs in the U.S. Top 40, which is the most by a U.S. rock band. Now, that's on their website.
Okay.
You can take that for whatever it's worth.
They're all so weird. Those charts are weird.
Sure.
There's right. 900 different charts.
As we've discovered.
we're going to get to one of them a little later on, but it's like, okay.
Take a shot at who inducted them into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, it couldn't have been Phil Spector.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. Though, Phil Spector was a big influence on Brian Wilson.
Huge
influence.
Yeah, right. Don't know.
Elton John.
Okay.
Elton John, 1988.
Yeah, they're swimming in the same pool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
Similar genius there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
0 Grammys on 4 nominations, though they won a Lifetime Achievement Award. So you could argue that that counts as a Grammy, but yeah. 12.4 million monthly listeners on Spotify.
Is that a lot?
We've seen numbers in the 20s and 30s for other bands that we've done.
Yeah.
So it's
you got Ed Sheeran doing like 104 million.
Yeah, right.
Something like that.
You know,
like,
he's got, I don't know how many songs with a billion listens.
Yeah, I've got 3 chords and a guitar. Okay, let's go.
And that, you know,
nice guy.
That's also,
come on.
That's also probably testament to the average age bracket of your Beach Boys listen, right? The folks in that age bracket are not necessarily jumping to Spotify to listen to music.
I agreed, yeah.
I thought these
dominated the radio for 50 years.
Yes.
Right? Just all the time, every time, yeah.
You know, one of the things I thought of with them as I was listening to this was music evolving them, or did they evolve the music around them? And I settled on they were evolving the music around them.
Yeah. Especially the Beach Boys in particular, because of, you know, the surf music was like, you had Dick Dale out there, but a lot of his stuff was instrumentals.
Mm-hmm.
But that he was taking like California kind of sound that was emerging and like putting words to it and like, you know, talking about things that those kids were doing. They were surfing, chasing girls, and riding around in cars.
Right.
And, you know, for the first 4 or 5 albums, it's like, yeah, that's kind of simple songs and simple life, and like they were very catchy and they were very, you know, unique to the time. And then you know, then he records Pet Sounds and everybody in the whole music world just kind of stops and you can hear a pin drop. It's like, what did he just do?
Yeah Well, and that, if you get back to that early surf stuff, and this is a question that I asked myself, I'm like, you know, you think about surf culture and music in the 60s, those two don't really marry up with the technology at the time. You can't listen to it while you're surfing, and you didn't have like, you didn't have Bluetooth portable speakers on the Correct. Beach. Like if you were on the beach, you weren't listening to any music.
Right. Yeah.
Now, obviously it was a party sort of scenario, like, hey, we're going to get together, we're going to have a party, we're going to put this on, and we're all surfers.
Yeah. It's riding around in car music.
Yeah.
You know, which is what you do in California, you know?
I thought that their first albums were very one note.
Oh, yeah.
All the songs were 3 minutes or less. Yeah. This is right in your wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is one and done. Let's go on to the next one.
Two chords.
They're pumping them out, man. Because there was more than 1 year where they had dropped two albums in the same year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And
they only put out like maybe 30 minutes of music per album.
So their father, Murray Wilson, was a failed songwriter, failed musician. And when he found out that, you know, his son was, you know, burgeoning on this genius type of musician, he controlled the band and the band's sound for the first 4 or 5 years. And that's probably why you see like, oh, we're just going to make one hit after the other. It's going to be the same song, but it's going to be a different, you know, in a different key. And we're just going to do the same stuff and everybody ready to go. And as an impressionable kind of youth and wanting to make sure his father was okay, he did it. Yeah. And then one session where they were doing Help Me Rhonda, Brian Wilson finally said, like, I'm fucking done with you. I fight you. And he fired him in the middle of the session. And from that point, he stopped going on the road. And you see the departure point from there where, like,
yeah, they graduate into their own sound.
Yeah.
I'm sure those Thanksgiving dinners were pleasant after that.
Oh, especially after Murray sold the rights to their catalog for like $500,000. I think it's worth like $250 million now.
Right.
Like that nearly killed Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
So it's like, you sold my kids.
Yeah, right. This is my creation, not yours.
No, man.
That's tough.
There's recordings on YouTube you can find of Murray Wilson in the box talking back, you know, on the squawk box back and forth and he's just such an asshole.
Huh.
Just such a jerk off.
The other question I asked was, did any of these guys actually surf, right? Could this be like the biggest spoof in the world? Like they're the Beach Boys and their first album said the number one surfing band in the country or something like that.
Yeah.
That was for Surfing USA. That's what's on the album cover. And I was like, I wonder if like they ever actually surfed. And it turns out they did. Dennis was an adamant or a dedicated surfer. He left a recording session so he could go surf.
Yeah, he was the only surfer of the group. The other guys didn't surf. Dennis was the hound. He was always around the girls. He was the surfer. And he was an awful drummer. And I doubt any of his drum kicks made it onto the actual master tape because Brian would just bring in another session musician.
Right.
He would never kick him out of the band because it was his brother and he wasn't gonna, you know, he wasn't gonna do that to them. But yeah, Dennis was not a musician. He wasn't anything. I don't think he ever sang. He might have sang backup or harmony somewhere, but he was never around. Like the family would always be like playing songs at the piano and kind of like, you know, that's where they learned harmonies and everything like that. And Dennis was always out banging the cheerleader somewhere else
sure.
or surfing. You know, he was like,
ironic that the only surfer in the band is the one who drowned.
Yeah, well, at the end of his life, Dennis was really struggling with a lot of like drugs,
stuff,
alcohol, and just, yeah, some bad marriages. And
yeah,
he was, I think he married Mike Love's daughter.
Oh boy.
A little, you know.
Well, let's get into this.
Tense.
This was your pick this week, so we'll let you kick it off.
So we're going to do a honorable mention first. And this might knock you off your chair, but I'm going with Kokomo. I knew I would get that reaction from you. We'll be falling in love to the rhythm of the steel drum band. Down in Kokomo. I grew up in Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take you to Bermuda. Bahama, come on, pretty mama. Key Largo, Montego.
I am astonished. Let's pick this apart. Sure, let's go for it.
No.
This is your pick.
Get your notes. As soon as I thought of Beach Boys, I'm like, oh, Kokomo, it's the hate, most hate. Got to be the most hated. And then I listen to it, and God damn it, if I'm not a sucker for a steel drum. And if we were just talking about Roadhouse, one of the other seminal great bad movies of that time period was Cocktail, which was what yes. Kokomo was written for. And, you know, listen, when I hear Kokomo, I think Cocktail, and I'm in a happy, happy place.
It's a dumb movie.
Oh.
The only thing I remember Jenkins about...
Rules. The only thing that guy was.
Right?
He was in FX, which is another
FX,
great movie.
Yeah. Absolutely. The only thing I remember about that movie is the dude from FX and Cruz flipping alcohol bottles around and thinking like, wow, that'd be pretty cool to be able to sit behind a bar and flip bottles around and fill drinks.
It's a terrible movie.
It's terrible.
It's but fuck you. I love it. And oh my that song. I don't love that song. That's why it's an honorable mention. But when I hear it, I'm like, I'm listening to the whole goddamn thing.
Awesome.
I love steel drums.
So there is, I certainly can't hang everything on this, but it's entirely possible that Kokomo contributed to the delay of recording this episode, because when I heard each voice, all I could think of was fucking Kokomo.
Oh, man.
I fucking hate the Beach Boys. And I didn't feel like I hated the Beach Boys, but I did.
I think John Stamos did a little tour with the Beach Boys on that song.
Did he?
He was in a video.
Oh, my gosh. This song, I knew it the second you said, let's do the Beach Boys. I'm like, fucking Kokomo's high on the list of most hated. And he's absolutely number one. It is so campy.
Oh, yeah. That's perfect.
We'll put out to sea and we'll perfect our chemistry. Oh, my gosh. Port-au-Prince, I want to catch a glimpse. Who the fuck takes romantic vacations to Haiti?
Haiti's a rough spot, man. They're going through it.
No slam on Haiti. I know we have been listened to in Haiti. I'm sorry if that hits you. This is their fourth most played song on Spotify.
I know, man.
They're fourth.
It's just, it's not right.
It's also one of their Grammy nominations. They only had four.
It's so unfair, because it's like, it's like if the first thing you thought of when you said Paul McCartney is that song Coming On.
Yes.
Paul had some real clunkers.
Real
there.
Clunkers. Yeah. Oh,
which
wow.
Awesome,
that's fucking hilarious.
Me too. I have no idea if Brian Wilson had anything to do with that song. It doesn't sound like it at all.
It doesn't.
It sounds like, guys, we have this white guy reggae canned here. Can we just put the Beach Boys in front of it and let them do their thing?
Right. Yeah. I mean, hey, we need you to make a song for a movie. All right, let's 10 minutes. Let's knock this out and get the fuck out of here.
I go back. I stand with that. Steel drums. Any fucking steel drum, I'm in.
All right. I have two honorable mentions, mm-hmm. actually, and they're both off the same album. The album is Shut Down.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is The Warmth of the Sun.
Yes. The sun.
I like the chord progression on this. It's a little disjunct. It's got a very melancholy sound. They bounce, you know, between major and minor. I guess they had written the song just before JFK's assassination, right, and recorded it just after. Mike Love said that JFK's death really affected them, and that you can kind of hear it in the sound of the song. Yeah. You can hear the sort of sadness in the tone of the song and the lyrics, even though it was written right before he died.
Like, we're talking like a week before he died.
Yes.
And then the day of, like, Brian Wilson gave an interview later, he would say, like, he was very much thinking about that when he was, like, putting the final touches on the song and the final touches on the harmonies and Mike Love with the lyrics and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a cool song. This is a theme that we're going to go over with the Beach Boys a lot. It is real human emotion.
Yeah. I think the rhythms in this have a classic early 60s ballad feel, and maybe they were the ones that made it classic. The guitar notes are picked out to mirror the drum rhythms, and the drums are kind of gently riding a cymbal with these rim shots on the snare. I don't know, I just thought it was good.
Yeah, you know. It's not a mainstream song.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Oh. Good pick.
My second honorable mention, also off of Shutdown, is Don't Worry Baby.
That's my number four, but you go ahead.
Well, we can push it up to four.
Okay.
All right. We will defer to your fourth.
Cool.
What is your number five?
So my number five is going to seem a little out of place here because it really kind of, I think it's, well, as I'm looking at it now, I'm like, well, anyhow, it made the list. So that's where I'm at with it. California Girls. I wish they This is the first song that Brian worked on when he retired from the road. And he said, guys, I'm retiring from the road because I can't stand it anymore. Now, most people said that that was kind of like stage fright and everything else like that. But it's been like, if you read some of the, you know, books or the interviews that he's given, he has music going through his head all the time. And it's not just like a tune. It's like a symphony going through his head.
Yeah.
And he said that he couldn't stand on stage and play those songs while that other music is going on through his head. And he's like, I can't do it. So I have to stay home and take what's in here and put it down on tape so that when you guys come off the road, we can record it. That's a different level of,
yes,
you know, call it what you want.
It sounds haunted.
Yes.
I mean, to have that many, yeah, ghosts running around in your head,
yeah,
of creativity that's driving your everyday life aside, that sounds, yeah, awful.
And it's like Quiet the Scream.
Sure.
Right? That's type of madness. It's madness,
yes,
right? Like, it's no wonder like a guy like Mozart or Beethoven would, like, you know, like, this is the kind of level of like musicianship I think that we're talking about here. Anyhow, when they come off the road from like doing like, you know, Help Me Rhonda and, you know, like, you know, Serpent Safari and things like that, and he invites them into his house, which right away, right now, has an indoor sandbox because he's at that kind,
yes,
of level in his drug addiction also.
Right, right.
He plays them these first chords of California Girls, and if you'll play it for them, there's nothing that sounds even remotely like this on the radio.
Yeah.
I mean, DLR did it better, I would argue.
So when I heard it, I was like, this is a great song, but I cannot unhear or unsee DLR doing the song. DLR, for those of you who don't know, David Lee Roth, you know, knowing the song as well as I do, I know it as well as I do because of DLR,
for
not
sure,
because of the Beach Boys.
For sure.
Which means I also have the sort of lascivious association of David Lee Roth, like a drooling wolf prowling around, you know, these various parts of the world looking at women.
In his tour guide hat.
Yeah. And that's not what you get when you listen to the Beach Boys version.
Yeah, this is a sweet kind of like a tip of the hat to the ladies,
yeah,
around the country.
Which, in all honesty, unfortunately pulls some of the fun out of it.
So I suppose, yeah. Listen, like I said, DLR did it better.
He did.
But it wouldn't have been if it weren't for Brian and his particular genius. And like, when you hear those first chords, you're like, where is this song going? And then it's like, starts with the dee, 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 dee,
yeah,
and then they go into it. It's just like, you can start to see the bubblings up of his genius.
Yeah.
He did it with one keyboard, and he took that instrument and made it do something that nobody had heard before. Soon enough, he's going to do it with every fucking instrument, including barking dogs.
Sure.
And, you know, throwing rocks down a staircase. Like, this guy's onto some shit. This, to me, is like the first bubbling up of that. You start to see it. Like, this is different.
I like it.
It'd be different.
All right.
Oh, and it was a tribute to Back in the USSR.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
He heard Back in the USSR, and he was like, oh, that's cool. And like, we're going to do that, but here in America, and we're going to tour around the world. Yeah.
All right, for my number five, I'm going to go to Pet Sounds, and I'm going with Sloop John B.
Let me go home.
It's a cover of a traditional West Indies song. The beauty of Pet Sounds comes through. There's so many instruments and sounds, but it doesn't sound too busy, which it could. There's great lyrics. The poor cook, he got the fits and threw away all of my grits. Then he took and he ate up all of my corn. Let me go home. This is the worst trip I've ever been on. I mean, that's...
This is the worst trip.
That's next level. The Kingston Trio did a calypso version of the song in 1958. And that's really what this version is kind of based on. There are no worst trip references in the Kingston Trio song. And what I read indicated that this was Brian Wilson talking about LSD.
Sure. He's expanding his mind, man.
Right. Right. And the Kingston Trio version isn't really all that different. Not worth really dropping a sample in. It's just more boring. You know, the Beach Boys version is better.
There's a lot of stuff going on in that song.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, interesting instruments happening. And there's a slide flute.
Mm-hmm. Something, yeah, it's just a different tune.
Yeah, and to start off his magnum opus with it. Well, it's in the middle of the album. I'm thinking of a different song. But anyhow, it's on Pet Sounds, and it's the middle of the album, and it's kind of like a palate cleanser of, like, we're going to go back into the heavy stuff soon, but this is kind of like a fun one. But even as it's fun, it's still, like, just a marvel to listen to.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, I never get bored of listening to that song. It's one of the few songs that I've heard a million times, but would listen to it from the opening measure to the last,
because
it's so cool. And then the very ending harmonies when they hoist me up the John B's, mm-hmm. You know, it's just really fucking cool.
It's a cool tune.
It's a really cool tune.
Yeah. All right. What's your number five?
Well, my number four was
your number four. Yeah.
Your honorable mention, Don't Worry Baby.
Correct.
Off of the 63 Shut You Down album. Brian is clear. Like, this song was written for the Ronettes.
Yes.
He was obsessed with Phil Spector. Game recognizes game, right? Phil Spector was doing the things that Brian Wilson was attempting to do and then surpassing him. He shipped that song over to Phil Spector. And he's like, yeah, we're good. We got it. We already have our...
Right.
What was the...
Be My Baby.
Be My Baby. It's like... The two songs are like brother and sister. You put them back to back. Mm-hmm. It's like those songs are very, very, very similar, but yet, you know, wildly different at the same time. And he kind of shipped it back to him. He's like, yeah, we already got Be My Baby. You go ahead and do it with your band here.
Yeah.
I don't know what their relationship was, if it was animus or if it was kind of like distance respect or what. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it was a mentoring thing from Phil.
I got the impression it was more of a... Brian Wilson hearing what Phil Spector was doing and going, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Not I want to do that exact thing, but I'm taking inspiration from what you're doing.
Yeah. It's almost as like he was looking in at what, like, listening in on Phil's work, and he was like, we're just going to have 32 tracks open at the same time.
Right.
Great. Because I've been working with four and I don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole wall of sound concept was something that Brian Wilson went, ooh. That's good.
Yeah, because Brian Wilson did not know how to run a recording studio. So how maddening is that? You have all this music in your head. You have to kick your dad out of the group because he was the producer and he sucked and he was an asshole. But he didn't know how to get all of this into those things.
Right.
And so, like, you know, he had a couple of musician friends who brought him in the studio and was like, this is what you can do. And after he learned that, he's like, all right, fucking gloves are off now.
Right.
Like, I'm doing this.
Al Jardine said this was his favorite recording session. Now, they recorded a lot of music, a lot of tracks. And for him to come out and say that, to have him single this out, I thought was interesting. Right. The title sounds like a love song, but the lyrics relate to a car.
Yeah.
I guess I should have kept my mouth shut when I started to brag about my car, but I can't back down now because I pushed the other guys too far. So he's talking about going to a race. Yeah. Wilson came out later and said it's both.
Yeah.
The Be My Baby song, that and Don't Worry Baby are both in E major, and they both have pretty similar melodies and chord progressions. And I'll drop a little chunk of that in now so you can hear it. Right, that brings us to my number
Your
four.
Your number four.
Number four, I'm going to Holland in 1973, and it's Sail On, Sail On, Sailor. I had no idea this was the Beach Boys.
No. Neither did I.
No. You know why? It's not Brian Wilson on vocals. It's also none of the other band members. It is a guy named Blondie Chaplin, who had joined the band around that time when Brian Wilson was not leaving the house.
Right.
And they needed some more vocals. And in fact, this was the song that, according to internet legend, Dennis Wilson... They had said, well, Dennis, why don't you sing it? So he was singing it, and he was like, ah, fuck this. Did you see the surf out there?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Exactly. It's like the waves are fucking killer. Blah, blah, blah. All right, didn't work. I'm out of here. And he left. So they tried a couple of the other guys in the band, and this guy, Blondie Chaplin, did it.
I dig that tune.
It's a great tune,
yeah.
Right? It's just got a cool groove
that's
to it.
That's a 70s vibe.
Oh,
there,
yeah, right.
Right?
That's some yacht rock. Sweet weed and and a nice glass of shakabatsi.
Right.
My cousin will get that reference if he's listening. But the groove of this song is super 70s. It's like the Doobies, Steely Dan, and the band all kind of tied up into one song.
Yeah.
It's from 1973, which might be another reason I like that sound so much. A lot of my early tastes kind of drew from that era, probably from radio play. It doesn't sound like the Beach Boys, not stylistically, not vocally, not instrumentally, but I dug it.
I'm picturing like chocolate brown corduroy bell-bottom pants and a crocheted vest and like...
Not me?
Yeah, not anybody.
I could have very well been wearing that. All right, what's your number three?
It's a number one hit for the Boys. Might be their first. This is the session that they finally fucking kicked Murray, the father, out of the band. And this is Help Me Rhonda. Brian did all the mixing and the production of this song, and he was 22 years old, which is supremely young for that type of engineering and production work to be done, like especially on a song like this and an album like this, and for the rest of his career. I like the Al Jardine's guitar, the high picking of the D chord, like it's kind of like almost like a carnival starting, but the chorus, like the Help Me Rhonda chorus, I love it.
Yeah.
And then when they get into their harmonies, like that's kind of makes a Beach Boys sound. Like the Help Me Rhonda harmonies at the end are really cool.
I have written under Help Me Rhonda a classic. Like it was just as I'm listening to it, I'm like, this is a fucking classic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like where I landed on them. You know, the rest of these is just like, this is a classic tune.
Yeah.
And it's one of their better classic tunes. I just really liked Help Me Rhonda.
All right. That brings me to my number three. You could argue that this thing could be at two or one very easily, and I will give it that due. It is Good Vibrations.
That's my number one.
Then we'll save it for number one.
Okay.
That brings us to our fantasy concert lineup.
Yeah.
All right. Who are you going to see the Beach Boys with?
I missed the fantasy concert lineup. I got some good ones here.
Let's hear them.
All right. So I wanted to stay with the whole Southern California vibe. I love Southern California vibe, right? And it's a band that was performing and recording before the Beach Boys. It was the same neighborhood. I think it was the same neighborhood. But these two guys were recording songs about, you know, the same types of things, surfing and skateboarding and stuff like that. And this kid down the block, Brian Wilson, didn't quite have his shit together yet, but he wrote a couple of tunes for him. Jan and Dean became super mega fucking hits.
They were big.
They were huge, yeah. Right?
I looked at this was a contender for my list, too.
I mean, Surf City.
Mm-hmm.
That's my jam right there.
Didn't one of them drive into the back of a truck?
Okay, we're going to get to that.
All right, sorry. Okay.
Surf City, sidewalk surfing. Now, if you listen to Sidewalk Surfing, and that starts out with grab your board and go sidewalk surfing with me.
Uh-huh.
But you listen to the Beach Boys' Catch a Wave, and you're sitting on top of it.
Sure.
Same fucking song. It's the same fucking song.
Yeah.
So Brian Wilson, you know, he's like, yeah, you know what? I like that melody. I'm going to use it for my song, too. Fuck you guys. But Dead Man's Curve is, like, the song that's, like, emblazoned in my brain because my dad always, like, would play this for us. And he would, like, turn down the lights and tell us the story. He's like, you know what happened to this guy? In Dead Man's Curve. They used to race around, the Pacific Coast Highway, and this guy fucking took his car and, like, raced a Jaguar XKE that pulled up on the side, and they just tumbled through this curb, and this fucking dude was paralyzed from the neck down.
Yeah, he rear-ended a semi, I thought,
something
like that.
They have an aerial picture of Dead Man's Curve, like, on Wikipedia. It's like a fucking hairpin out into the ocean. Like, why would you, like, what the fuck are you doing? It's like, I always thought it was just like this curve, you know, like,
right.
just lost the edge and just kind of like skidded up the sidewalk. And no, it's a hairpin.
180
like,
degrees.
Off the PCH, like into the ocean. It's like, oh, okay, that's different. That is Dead Man's Curve. And then because there was this triangulation of, I want to just put it, it wasn't competition, it was musical development. Phil Spector, Brian Wilson, and Holland Dozier and Holland from Motown all had an eye on each other or an ear on each other. And they were all listening to each other and they're all kind of like pushing each other in these different areas. And it's really propelling music forward. I want to see Diana Ross with the Supremes.
Ooh, I like that. Through the mirror of my mind, time after time, I see reflections of you and me. Reflections of
Reflections is a like just an answer to Brian Wilson's like, I see what you do over there. Listen to this.
Yeah.
You're going to be impressed. And he was. Reflections is just a wonderful song. Just fucking awesome. And the production value of that is like, it's like it wouldn't be until Marvin Gaye does What's Going On is where you're going to see stuff like that. But like Stop in the Name of Love and, you know, Baby Love, like those are production values. You can hear Phil Spector in them.
Yep.
You can hear Brian Wilson in them, but you can hear their own thing in them. Like Holland, Dozier and Holland were also adding things onto it. So I like that whole mix of like, you know, the circle of music, like being pushed one another. And the Beatles are kind of just like, what's going on over there?
Right.
Shit, we gotta go over there, you know?
We don't have any sunshine over here. We have to record somewhere.
What are they talking about? The beach and the surfing here. I mean, you can't surf on cliffs. And then the last one, because it just popped in my head, I'm like, oh, this is right around the same time. I want to see it. And you get one song. But this one song is good enough. Like, it'll carry the day. I want to see the Velvet Underground. Riding a stud's big head, Jim. You know, those were different times. All the poets, they studied rules of verse and those
cities, they rolled their eyes. CJ!
Fuck you, you sniped me.
Go ahead. That, because I want to see, I want one song.
Yeah, you sniped me. That was one of my two. Because I looked at these guys and I looked at Pet Sounds and the development and the sort of counterculture that was evolving with that sound.
Yeah.
Right? And the influence that drugs were having on the music and that music was likely having on the drugs, right? I thought VU would be a great match to kind of pair with this. And VU's got a deep catalog, and you can argue, you know, how listenable all of it is. I know a lot of people that are really rabid fans of this band.
Yeah.
As I listen to their stuff, there's stuff that I like. There's stuff that I'm less fond of.
Yeah.
I think Sweet Jane is my favorite. I love Sweet Jane.
Good tune. I like it. I was thinking Heroin.
But I'm gonna try for the kingdom, if I can, 'cause it makes me feel like I'm a man. When I put a spike into my vein, and I tell you things aren't quite the same. When I'm rushing on my run, and I feel just like Jesus' son. And I guess that I just don't know. And I guess that I just don't know.
Heroin's good too.
I love that fucking song. It's just, we were talking about charts. Heroin, recorded in 1967, charted in at the number 16 spot in 1993 on the Hot Dance Club Play chart for Billboard. Dance music.
Right.
Heroin. Okay.
Times are weird, right?
But the guitarist for the other guitarist, or he was a multi-musical guy, John Cale, was in Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
He went on and did a solo thing. I want to hear him do Barracuda.
Cold call, sick to death of nothing, slipping just like nothing did. Burns great room and the wind was choking, smoking in the summer heat.
It's not the Barracuda.
Not the hard version?
No. It's his own
Barracuda. His own song.
His own song. Listen to that song. You will love it instantly, and you will be like, that's my new favorite tune, because it's really awesome.
All right.
It's a great tune. But yeah, Brian Eno said about Velvet Underground, he's like, you know, that album, the one with Heroin on it, it's like the one with the banana and Andy Warhol painting, because they're Andy Warhol's buddies. And he's like, that album sold like 30,000 albums. It didn't do a lot. He's like, but everybody that bought that album started a band. That's how much they influence people, because they're like, we can do this.
Oh, Lou Reed was great.
Yeah.
He was great.
Yeah.
Died at 71 of liver disease.
Yeah.
Not good.
A rough life.
A rough life.
Studio 54.
So after VU gets off the stage, I'm going to go back into that very California sound. It's the Mamas and the Papas.
Oh, yeah, man.
California Dreamin' is hands down my favorite.
That is, go ahead.
Hands down my favorite. And apparently everybody else is too, because it has 830 million listens on Spotify, while their next song has 87 million. So it dominates the
What's
listeners.
Their next song, Monday? Monday?
Monday, Monday, which is probably my next favorite song of theirs. It's great.
Monday, Monday, can't trust that day. Sometimes it just turns out that way. Oh, Monday morning, you gave me no warning of what was to be. Oh, Monday morning.
and here's something that, maybe, you know, our listeners knew or didn't know. She did not die from choking on a ham sandwich.
That's such an awful thing.
But the story behind why that came out is kind of interesting. So she had a heart attack at 32. She was with her manager, and the manager called the publicist and said, Mama Cass is dead. She died of a heart attack. This is going to result in a shitload of conspiracy theories that it was drug-related. So just say she died choking on a ham sandwich.
Oh.
So that's what the publicist did. And so everybody
believed...
They didn't
workshop.
They didn't manipulate that very well. An autopsy apparently showed no drugs in her system. Now, you could probably argue that previous drug use led to the heart attack, but apparently it wasn't an overdose.
Yeah.
Now, her daughter has said in interviews over the years, this fucking sucked, because as I was growing up and I would meet new people, even when I was a young girl, I would go to other people's houses and play with their kids. And, you know, the parents would be like, well, we're going to have lunch, but we're not going to serve any ham sandwiches.
Awful, right?
That kind of shit played over and over and over again to this young girl. And then as she grew up, you know, she just kept hearing it. Finally, she came out. She's like, it wasn't a fucking ham sandwich. She just had a heart attack.
I love the Mamas and the Papas.
Her version of Dream a Little Dream.
Yeah.
Dream a little dream of me. Stars fading, but I linger on. Still craving your kiss. I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear. Just saying this.
It's really good.
California Dreamin', I think the first time I ever heard that song, as soon as I heard it, I'm like, that's my favorite song of all time. I love that fucking song. It was in the Hollywood Nights movie. Did you ever see it? 1982, Michelle Pfeiffer's first role, Tony Danza's in it.
I don't think I have.
It's so fucking great. It's so sophomoric. Listen, the height of the movie was when the guy steals the microphone at the homecoming dance and he farts out a song. Like, that's the level of humor.
Sounds highbrow.
It's awesome. And they play this song in there, and one of the other guys is going off to Vietnam the next day, and they play this song as a kind of a, it's a really cool. And then that song is so awesome.
There's something very sentimental to me about the song. I don't know why that is, but it's sort of like, you know, they're talking about brown leaves, you know, you're singing about the fall.
Yeah.
You're kind of at that point where you're like, ooh, it's starting to get a little chilly outside. We're going to go inside and we're going to, you know, live inside for the next fucking 6 months if you live in Chicago. But you know, you kind of get this sort of comfort from it that I don't know. I really like.
All the leaves are brown are like, and the sky is gray.
And the sky
it's
is gray.
Like that lyric right there, kind of, I think you're right about that. It's just like, because I love the autumn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and the whole song is awesome.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're right. Like, if you were to make a list of like the top California songs, like, I think that goes right to the top of the list. I really do like that song.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, I'm glad I get to see them.
There you go. There you go. All right. What is your number two?
All right, so anytime I hear this song, it confirms all of my life choices. Around 14, when I first visited Hawaii, we were on the beach and I saw a bunch of surfers 100 yards out doing their thing. And from that moment forward, I was like, I want to do that. And I want to know everything that they know, and I want to be everything that they are, because that's the fucking coolest thing I've ever seen. And when I came back, I took a lot of shit because, like, all of a sudden, like, my style had changed.
Oh, I remember the Ocean Pacific era for you.
But I didn't even, like, Ocean Pacific to me was stuff that everybody could buy at Sears. I needed my shit from, like, the actual, like, I needed to be authentic about this. And it was very hard because the internet was not around, so I had to get a subscription to Surfer Magazine, which I think I was one of three subscriptions in the state of Illinois. It was me and two other kids that we went to high school with who also probably hit. Because I remember going through the other kids, like, oh, you got the new Surfer? My brother, you know, threw mine out. Can I look at it? He's like, yeah, dude, I didn't know you. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm like all over this. Surfing USA is that song.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA, then everybody'd be surfing like California. You'd see them wearing their baggies, Huarache sandals too, a bushy, bushy blonde hairdo. Surfing USA.
It's just awesome. the going up and down the coastline, you know, talking about their Huarache sandals, you know, and wearing the bushy blonde hairdos.
Yep.
I'm like, it's just like, this is the culture that I kind of like adopted, you know, low those many years ago, which is almost 40 years ago. I've never really turned away from that culture. Like, I love it. I still watch like surfing competitions.
Right.
I'm still up on it. I just recently got rid of my surfing magazine subscription like 6 years ago, I think.
And you surfed for the first time recently.
That's right. And like, so full circle, like you and I and your family and my family, we went out to Hawaii, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And yeah, for the first time, we like surfed the North Shore, man.
It's fucking harder than it looks.
It's a lot fucking... I wish I got into it a little bit earlier.
Yeah, so
like,
yeah.
A better athlete.
50 years old is a tough age to start surfing at. But you know,
as
hey.
Point Break, as the guy at the sandwich shop says, say, hey, man, life's not over. You're surfing. So yeah, this song, whenever I hear it, I'm like, I listen to the whole thing because I'm like, this is part of... I call it like part of my culture now because it's part of me.
Sure. This is their third most played on Spotify.
Okay.
And I found when I was listening to it, I couldn't help but start singing along with Inside Outside USA.
Yeah, right.
Just as those lyrics go through, you're like, Inside Outside USA. Like, it was great. It was great. All right, my number two, going to Surfer Girl in 1963. We're going to go with In My Room. This was a super throwback for me for some reason. And I don't...
Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, yeah. As I listen to it, I'm like, well, this kind of makes sense, right? You know, it's... there's something to me that I related to of this, like, ability to go to your own place, right?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like... And you didn't have this because you had a brother and you guys didn't have your own bedrooms in your first house. I had two sisters... And so they lived in one bedroom and I had my own bedroom. So my bedroom was really truly mine. Like if I wanted to be somewhere by myself, that was my room.
I hadn't, well, you're right. I hadn't thought about that because I didn't really know that solitude.
Right.
Or you're seeking solitude.
Yeah.
So I never framed this song like that. That's interesting that you do.
That's kind of where I was brought to when I listened to it now. And what I kind of tagged it to, whether or not I was cognizant of that back when I was listening to it, I don't know. I don't know.
But my dreaming.
Yeah, right. It's very simple, yeah. Right? But this is 1963. This is not Pet Sounds. This is,
yeah.
What is that, 6 years before that? Pet Sounds was what, 69?
66. Yeah.
All right, so it was a few years before Pet Sounds.
But, go ahead, finish your point.
Early sound, great rhythm guitar kind of rolling through in the background. It's super short. It's 2 minutes and 10 seconds long.
Yeah.
The lyrics are good. Now it's dark and I'm alone, but I won't be afraid in my room.
It's so going to where I think you were going with your Pet Sounds thing, all the songs before, Surfing Safari 409, Surfing USA, Shutdown, there's a theme there.
Yeah.
Right? It's girls, it's cars,
yes.
It's surfing. And I think this is Brian kind of playing around with like, I'm going to talk about the things that are going on inside me.
Yeah.
Like, and lo and behold, people like to hear songs that they can relate to a lot.
Yeah.
And In My Room is that first kind of attempt. And like, so I think it like gives him like the courage of like, yes, there's a pathway to getting to, you know, I know there's an answer on Pet Sounds.
Right.
Like where I'm just going to pour out my heart on the tape.
Yeah.
And I think that like, this is the sophomore version of that. And it's really good. Yeah. I like it. I've always liked that song.
Yeah. That's a good analysis. How he said it was a place where you could lock out the world and be yourself. You know, that's not a quote, but
right.
He, you know, do my crying and my sighing laugh at yesterday. It's kind of a cool idea, right? I'm going to be upset about the shit I'm going to upset about. And then I'm going to turn around and look at it in the rearview mirror and go like, fuck.
And again,
it's yesterday.
You're talking about 1963.
Mm-hmm.
That's a trippy song to be playing, you know, because again, we're just coming out of like the birth of rock and roll.
Right.
And the birth of rock and roll is very much like a herky jerky kind of like, you know, little speed sped up. Kind of like music, and people are starting to like that. And all of a sudden, like he comes along with
he downshifts
weirdo song. Yeah, it's a downshift, and
you know, males weren't exactly encouraged to get in touch with their feelings in 1963.
But as I think it was Dennis Wilson who said, it's like, it's a makeout song. You put it on and you make out.
That's an, I'd never thought of this as a makeout. And did I ever try it?
I don't, hopefully while you're not alone.
I don't. A lot of mirrors.
And it's a quick makeout session because it's a 2.5
minutes. 2.5 minutes. Yeah. You better.
You know, there's no repeat on a 45, you know?
All right. I think that brings us to your number one, right?
Yeah, we both have the same one, right?
Or no, I had called it as my number three.
Yeah. So Good Vibration.
Good Vibrations.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
This is the song that is released 6 months after Pet Sounds. So Pet Sounds is in May of 66. Good Vibrations is released as a single or something. I don't know if it made an album right off the bat, but he released it and it was a banger fucking hit because it was out of the same Pet Sounds sessions. 90 fucking hours of tape.
For this one song.
For this one song. And it was a bunch of pieces from the Pet Sounds sessions that he kind of like had on a reel. And he's like, okay, challenge accepted. I'm going to put together something. Give me that fucking
theremin.
No, the theremin.
Yeah.
Bring that in here. We're going to start off with that.
Yeah.
Okay? I love this song because it's, we'll get into the whys, but it's also, I drop Pet Sounds. Paul McCartney's already said it was the greatest fucking album he's ever heard. And now I'm going to drop Good Vibrations on your head. Just to let you know, I still got bullets in my gun.
Yeah, I'm not done yet.
I'm just getting started. Yeah. That really shook the shit out of the Beatles.
Yeah.
And I think that's an alpha-ass move. You know?
So when I heard the song, I had an initial thought. And it wasn't negative, per se, but it wasn't overly positive. But I'm like, you know what? I got to listen to the whole song. And I listened to the whole song. And then I kind of cocked my head and I restarted it and I listened to it again. And I did it probably 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
There's a complexity in here that is so fucking sneaky, or at least it was sneaky to me. And there's reasons that I'll get to as to why I had an initial feeling on that.
It's like looking at the Hope Diamond. There's so many facets to it. Like every time you listen to it or perceive it, it's like cellos as rhythm
sections?
Yes. Excuse me?
Yes. And at face value, you're like, okay, got to keep those good vibrations going, da-da-da-da-da, right? And pretty simple kind of...
The lyrics are really simple, but it...
There's a good story behind it.
Okay.
But yes, the lyrics are simple. And the way the song sort of plays, it just kind of sneaks from one part to another part to another part. And then you get these cellos playing. You've got these other instruments, the theremin in there. You've got stuff that is building. And you're like, wow, This is not a B kind of song. It's
a symphony.
Yeah, it's great.
It has movement.
It's great.
It doesn't sound like anything that came before it, and really not sense. And again, like we've said that, I've said that a couple of times during this podcast already, and that is a testament to his genius. Like he's making music that nobody thought of before and really hasn't been duplicated since.
Yeah.
And it's just like Good Vibrations. Find me a song that's even close to that.
Well, and so I wrote here, this song might sum up this band mm-hmm. in a single song.
Yeah.
Combining that sort of later LSD-inspired sound
ooh, yeah.
with their original Beach vibe, and they've sort of taken the whole breadth of the career and just spun it and put a zip tie around it and like tightened it into one song.
It's just a masterpiece.
It's great.
And again, like the California vibe is there because it's good vibration.
Yeah.
The beginning of the song is awesome. Just the keys mm-hmm. going,
yeah.
and then Mike Love comes in with it. No, it's not. It's Carl. Carl sings on the song.
Yes. And none of the Beach Boys play an instrument.
It's no.
All session musicians, all including Glenn Campbell. Like a rhinestone cowboy. He was one of the guitarists on this.
He traveled with them a lot. But yeah, the Wrecking Crew was basically this traveling symphony of, you know, musicians. And I forget the woman's name, but everybody pointed to her as like this bassist. she was the only woman in the room, and she is the biggest badass on the planet. Because when her and Brian would talk about bass lines, she was giving him the ideas.
Yeah.
Which and these Wrecking Crew guys were like the top of the top as far as musicianship goes. And they're all just like, we loved working with Brian because he knew exactly how to transmit what it to every single note for every single instrument, no matter what we were playing, he could tell us exactly what we wanted to hear and we could do it for him. And we turn around, I forget this bassist, this woman's name, but she was like, no, Brian, I think let's try this way. And they're all looking at us like, that's badass.
Yeah.
And in that room and that 1965, 66,
sure.
When she's doing that, it's crazy.
This is their second most played on Spotify at 412 million.
You are a Spotify animal. Did you cut a deal with them?
You're kind of on my shit list.
Can I get off my ass?
As it turns out, Universal has only come after us on Spotify. They didn't come after us on iTunes, which represents twice as many listeners for it.
Apple don't have to give shit.
I guess not.
Get off that nonsense.
So my complaint about this song is that fucking commercial from the 80s for Sunkist.
Sun-kissed feeling is in the air. The good vibrations are everywhere. I'm drinking up good vibrations. Sun-kissed orange soda taste sensations. Bubbly orange jubilation. Sun-kissed is a taste sensation. I'm giving out good vibrations. Bubbly sun-kissed sensation. Sun-kissed is feeling out.
That was so like in my head whenever I heard Good Vibrations. Do you remember this commercial?
I'm sure I would, but I don't want to.
Sun-kissed orange soda taste sensation.
Oh, no. No.
Good.
Why did you do that?
It's terrible. And when you listen to this episode, you're going to hear a little snippet of that because it's still on YouTube. And I was like, are they still fucking making this diabetic syrup? This stuff had more sugar than anything else. All right. That brings me to my number one. We're going with God Only Knows.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you.
To have a love song that starts with, I may not always love you, it's brilliant. I may not always love you, but as long as there are stars above, you never need to doubt it. I just thought it was so cool.
Everything about this song is, again, it's good that you kept this as your number one because it's a nice entree into the conversation that I wanted to have. Uh-huh. The reason why I didn't have any Pet Sounds songs on my list was because that is, probably the most perfect fucking album ever made.
It's Pantheon worthy for sure. Yeah.
And so God Only Knows is like the anchor song or one of the anchor songs, smack dab in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And the first time I heard it, I'm like, what's going on here? Sounds like a love song, but it doesn't really sound like a love song. It sounds like he's not really sure,
right,
of her or him or what the fuck is going on. And as it turns out, that's just the truth in love.
Right? Yeah, right.
You know,
it's not always 100% surety at all times.
It's
yeah.
Oh man, it's heavy stuff.
Yeah.
But it's great. And the harmonies. The
harmonies are great.
He perfected them in that song.
The song had a very Sgt. Pepper feel to it. And it was released 1 year before Sgt. Pepper was released.
Yep.
So it's not like they ripped off the Beatles on this one. I'd say the Beatles maybe took some influence off of Brian for Sgt. Pepper, possibly.
Paul McCartney said God Only Knows is his favorite song.
Did he?
He said it was, let me see if I've got it here. Go ahead. I'll come around to it.
They've graduated from the early songs of Cars and Surfing and Girls, as we've talked about. I like that aspect of it. There's a great complexity to the vocals with this wide array of backing instruments. They have a French horn, as you know. I've got mad props for the French horn.
Love it.
They've got sleigh bells. At one point, they play plastic cups.
Barking dog.
Yeah, right? The only Beach Boy instrument on the track is Carl Wilson's guitar,
right,
who also sang the leads. The rest were all session musicians playing. So Carl Wilson is the only Beach Boy playing on this track.
Yeah.
Just a very sweet song.
It's, the song in and of itself, and then in the larger scope of the entire album, it's the first concept album that you can point to.
Yeah.
I mean, even before, like, Floyd was still just kind of like playing around with animals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We're doing it. Waters hadn't really, you know, grabbed the reins and did his concepts until a little later. But like, Pet Sounds is a concept album.
Yeah.
And what the genius of it is that there is an actual, like, there's a note that runs through all the songs. And I can't tell you what that note is, but if you listen to the album throughout, you'll start to hear like this, it's, I guess note isn't the right, it's a resonance that kind of like hums through every sound. And right. Every song. And I don't know if that was intentional by him or if it's just something that I've convinced myself of. But it's not I didn't come up with that. I read that, like, that was a thing.
Right.
And it's more or less like a symphony with movement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it starts off with, you know, one of my favorite songs of all time is Wouldn't It Be Nice? About it is that, I'm sorry, were you done with your battle announcement?
I believe so.
Oh, sorry. I kind of gone off the road. I've been waiting for this moment. The thing about like Sgt. Pepper's, and I'm not here to say like Sgt. Pepper's isn't a great album. It is. It's one of my, you're going to put it in the top five for sure. But Pet Sounds is way better because the songs are so human and so relatable. Even Wouldn't It Be Nice? I mean, that's the starting off of the song. And it's like, hey, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we were a little older and we could live together and we can just get on with our lives? And then it just turns into this, you know, these songs about like, you know, you still believe in me. It was, you know, kind of questioning, going back to that questioning of like, are you really sure that you want to be? It's like, this is a human drama, like human life being played out before you on the tape. Whereas the Sgt. Pepper, like, those are kind of like, you know, British nursery rhymes set to acid.
You know, right.
Lovely read of me, you know, great song.
You read a lot more into Wouldn't It Be Nice than I did. I wrote here, someone's getting a little tired of conservative American values because it sounds like he's saying, would it be nice if we got married so I could nail you?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's what he's saying, but I think it's more like, sweetly put.
Right. You know? I DLR'd it a little bit there.
But, you know, and, you know, when the day is over, we can be together still. You know, this is like, you know, the human existence,
yes.
You know, playing itself out in, you know, whatever it is, 12 or 13 songs. And I think that, except for like Snoop John B, which I can't really make that connection to it, but it's still a fucking banger tune.
Yeah, there's an outlier in there with Snoop John B.
But it's a really wonderful album. Whenever I turn it on, I'm like always kind of, it's always like mesmerizing.
Yeah.
Almost to a point.
All right, now that you've loved on them, what do you hate about them?
I don't like their car songs. I don't like any of their car songs.
She's real fine, my 409, my 409. Well, I save my pennies and I save my dimes. Giddy up, 409. Before I knew there would be a time. Giddy up, 409. When I would buy a brand new
409.
Are they going to shut you down? I'm not a car guy. I guess I'm not a car guy.
That first stuff was super one note.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Very one note. Got a little tiresome. And man, there's a lot of them.
Oh, my God.
There's what, six or seven albums before they get to anything with some meat on it?
Yeah, their first record, that surfing record, Rick Dunn went surfing.
Yeah.
And it's like they're all like holding their nose and talking like this.
Yeah.
And saying like this. Like, right. Is that the aesthetic that you're going for? I don't think so.
Well, you know my thoughts on Kokomo, obviously. I also had on here, and it's from that same early era, Be True to Your School.
Oh, yeah. Rah, rah, rah.
Sis, boom, bah. It's just dumb.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's dumb.
And, you know, a lot of their early stuff was very simple and very arguably outdated, but that song kind of took the cake.
Oh, Honda, Honda, go fast, faster, little Honda. Who sings about a Honda coupe? Fuck out of here. I don't like it. I don't like I Get Around.
Round, round, get around, I get around, yeah, get around, round, round, I get around,
I get around.
So these two, I Get Around, round, round, yeah. Get Around, and Barbara Ann.
Went to a dance, looking for romance, saw Barbara Ann, so I thought I'd take a chance with Barbara Ann.
Barbara Ann's a little annoying.
The high-pitched...
Yes. Whoever's wailing in the background there, the Barbara Ann...
I think that's Brian.
Yeah, he could have maybe taken that down a notch.
It's, like, really too high-pitched. It's always... It's, like, really repetitive. And it's just on and on and on. Went to a dance. Look at... I'm like, really?
So I get around. That brings me back to middle school. Our music teacher had us sing I Get Around in music class.
Oh. It's obnoxious. Both of them are. You know, like, do you want to dance?
Do you want to dance and hold my hand? Tell me, baby, I'm your loving man. Oh, baby, do you want to dance? Do you want to dance?
Yes.
Do you want to dance? Come on. I mean, those are like the artistry was just like not there.
It's not there.
A lot of it is just like, you know, we need another single. Come on, let's
yeah.
Come on. And he probably wrote that song in like 45 seconds.
All right, getting into our coolest 4 seconds.
I know I just shit on him, but like the very start of Barbara Ann.
I can't read.
What? No.
What?
Ba, ba, ba. You don't know how to sing. Ba, ba, ba.
Flashy, have you any
ba 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 ba
ba ba ba ba ba ba
ba ba ba ba ba.
And again, because it's in that movie Hollywood Nights when they pull their final prank that does the needle drop. But I like it's like this empty room and just I think it's Mike Love that's first started ba 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 ba. I like that. But in the rest of the song, I'm like, I'm out.
I had the intro to Fun, Fun, Fun. Another song that I don't particularly care for, but it's 100% Chuck Berry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's lifted straight from him.
Yeah. You know, oh, absolutely.
It's Johnny B. Good.
Yes.
Oh, we got this girl, took her T-Bird out. I like I said before, I like the intro to California Girls, but then I like how it like that intro is like a weirdo intro, and then it goes into a Western. A Western song.
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably would lead DLR to it. Didn't he have a song like that?
Yeah, Happy Trails.
Okay.
I like the end of Wouldn't It Be Nice?
You know, it seems the more we talk about it, it only makes it worse to live.
They drop into a slow sequence where they sing, you know, it seems the more we talk about it, it makes it worse to live without it. I just like that vocal sequence there.
Yeah, I'm trying to pick out my favorite, like, harmonization. And I think, like, the song off of Pet Sounds, You Still Believe in Me. It's just, there's no lyrics to it. It's just them vocalizing harmonies at like the end of the song, going back and forth, and the music comes back in and comes back out. And it's just like, those are really, like, man, that's, it's, to me, it's just like pretty awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Like, as far as like 1966 goes.
I do like the very end of Good Vibrations, where they're coming out of the breakdown and they finish it with the na-na-nas, when then the cello and the theremin just kind of fade out on the end of it. Yeah.
You ever see that video?
No.
Fantastic.
Is it?
They're on like tangerine tuxedos, and Mike Love is standing there with the theremin doing his theremin thing. It's funny shit.
I did hear a song called Do It Again, and the intro. Listen to We Care a Lot by Faith No More. These guys, they ripped it off of the Beach Boys. The intros to both songs are so similar.
That's awesome.
All right, Sisters of Mercy.
I revisit Pet Sounds like once a year as kind of like a habit, but I don't really travel too far else into their catalog.
I could see maybe at some point throwing Pet Sounds on and giving it another spin, because I didn't know it terribly well. I knew, you know, the handful of tracks that I knew off of it, I knew pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other songs I didn't know as well. And I think, just like I had described my relationship with Good Vibrations and listening to it six or eight times and going, oh, this is so very different from what I thought it was.
Right. Yeah.
That I think I would get that appreciation for the other tracks on that album.
Which is kind of like where I was like maybe a dozen years ago, when I was like, you know, let me, they're always put up the top. Like, let me give it another listen to it. Like, I'm missing something. And
right.
And the more and more you listen to it, and the more and more you know about it and learn about it, you're like, oh, yeah, there is a lot of, you know, a lot of torment, a lot of, you know, it's a very, the note that runs through it is melancholy.
Sure.
Like, the whole album is melancholy. Mike Love even said, he's like, even the happy songs sound sad.
Yeah, but it's melancholy without the sort of
desperation
of the heroin music that we've talked about.
Exactly.
Even though they could very well have been on heroin, and I think that might have made an appearance at some point.
Yeah, you know, you're right about that. It's because it's like it's this melancholy, but it's like almost like this hopeful, like, I still have hope.
Yeah,
it's
not desperation.
Yeah, it's not like Alice in Chains of Dirt, where like, I'm done.
I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And if I don't, I'm going to be pissed because I'm done. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's also what makes it such a human kind of, like, you know, everybody feels that way. And, you know, everybody still hangs on to hope. And here you go.
Yeah. And I don't think we have to ask the Cars question of, did they move music forward? I think it's undeniable.
Yes.
I think it's undeniable.
Yeah, 100%.
The MVP here, it's got to be Brian Wilson. It really does.
No,
you could tip your cap towards LSD, because I think that there were some contributing factors there. But it's Brian Wilson.
Yeah, for sure. Like, that's the easy.
Yes, the easy answer.
Even like the competition that he might have felt with like a Phil Spector or even the Beatles, and who's the fifth Beatle? George Martin.
Right?
George Martin, the producer.
Yeah.
As a producer, really, like Sgt. Pepper, like, really is the producer's work.
Sure.
Maybe that, the competition, or just his like final fuck you to his father. Because when Murray Wilson leaves the studio, that's when Brian Wilson is left to do the thing that he was capable of doing, but was being held back by Murray Wilson.
Right.
So maybe Murray Wilson finally getting the boot, the big fire, you know.
Right, right. All right. Our rankings.
Need a skill? I put these guys at a 4. That is 3.99 Brian Wilson. Because I don't think the rest of them had a ton of talent. Now, you've got some vocal characteristics there. And you can argue, and I think this is one of the things that, I don't know how well this audience or our audience is going to like this episode, because I think you're either with the Beach Boys or you're against the Beach Boys, right? I don't think there's a lot of gray area there. And you can argue that some of those vocal characteristics can be a little shrill sounding at times, not as rich as other bands' vocals.
Yeah, but I also think that every person has the top four that they really like of the Beach Boys music. You know, they're just ubiquitous. They're traditional American standard pop music.
Right.
That, you know, is elevated in certain areas and certain areas is not elevated.
Yeah.
You know, not all the time you're looking for a good vibration. You're looking for a Serpent Safari. Well, they got both, right?
Yeah.
I'm right there with you. They're a 4. Carl was a fine guitarist. Al was a fine guitarist. But, like, there's nothing – like, he brought in session musicians for all of their important work.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brian is a genius on the level of, like, Beethoven. Like, that's where he's at.
And you touched on this earlier. Guys like Phil Spector, and regardless of what you think of Phil Spector as a person – the guy was a pretty brilliant manager and producer. And one of the things that Spector did that nobody else had done before that was use the board as
the instrument.
Another instrument.
Yeah. Well, the importance of the music producer certainly starts to bubble up. You've got George Martin working with the Beatles, Brian doing his thing, Phil Spector. Then you have Isaac Hayes not long after that, and just blowing everybody away with what he was doing. He was very much of a composer's style producer as well.
Yeah.
And then Brian Eno and all those guys, like the producers become almost as important, even still, like Butch Vig, still is. Like they leave their mark that's important on these bands.
Image? I had them at a 2.
So there's.
I never thought these guys were cool.
No, not even when like the Ronald Reagan administration kicked them off of the mall and the 1982, Celebration for America won't let the Beach Boys play because they're druggies.
Yeah. They still weren't cool.
They were not cool. No. It's not like, oh, wow, I want to be like Mike Love. No. They're like a 2. And they're really like a 1.5.
Yeah, you can argue
because like, they sold out everything, like Sunkissed, like they
Kokomo.
They couldn't get Kokomo, right? They couldn't get money fast enough in those pockets. Well, largely because they all had fucking paternity suits against
them. Sure.
Those fucking guys fuck like rats.
And I don't care about the whole selling out thing. We've talked about that, right? You know, make money when you can, but they just weren't cool.
No, they were not. Dennis was the coolest guy, and the last 8 years of his life were a fucking wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since the Manson thing. Like when you're friends with Charlie Manson
right.
A month before he is the evil man of the world. Like, you got an issue going.
Catalog. I also had him at a 2 for the catalog because you can't take Pet Sounds and elevate 12 other albums or 15 other albums with one album.
They've got like 6 greatest hits. 7.
Go, albums. It's ridiculous how much they have out there.
I remember the one album that I remember, like it's a live shot out into the darkness over this crowd and like an Indian on a horse, and it's the Beach Boys live set from like Washington D.C. or something like that. And that album cover is, I'm like, how did the Beach Boys get from there to like Native Americans riding a horse? It's like, what? Who's doing the album art?
Oh, goodness. Well, thanks for sticking with us here, folks. I know this was a chatty one. We haven't done this in a while. So.
A hot minute.
And I haven't actually seen you very often in the last 6 months either.
Just had a lot going on, man.
Running around.
Your second kid graduating from high school.
That's right.
Congratulations to Ava.
Thank you very much. Hey, speaking of your father, Padre, first of all, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Padre has his own app, a game app.
That's right.
And it's called Plus One. Plus and the number one. Maybe you'd like to describe it.
And it's a word game that his father created, got to be 40 or 50 years ago. I think he had it syndicated in a couple of newspapers, and then we retained the rights to it, and we decided to, like, as an homage to my grandfather, his father, and also to kind of like the resurgence of these word games, like Wordle, and he put together Plus One, and it's on the App Store Some of them are hard.
I play it every day. I actually do.
Oh.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. Download Plus One. Keep an eye out for us. We'll be back, you know, like I said, 3 to 4 months. And appreciate you listening to us. Thank you.